Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Hercules and the Space Gods, I am proud to present the Worldwide Religion of Love with Michael and Diane Duncan. Greetings and welcome, Michael and Diane. How are you?
Greetings, Hercules. Doing very, very well today. To be here is such a treat and such a pleasure, Hercules. Thank you for this opportunity. And I'll, Diane will say hi.
Good evening, Hercules. How
Hello.
Are you?
I'm doing phenomenal, and I'm glad you guys are doing well as well. Happy belated anniversary.
Oh, we had a spectacular time. We had our vacation at the same time. We had the Tao come down with the master of the largest temple in the
wow.
in the Western Hemisphere. Yes, she is the one, the master for the Western Hemisphere. So that was really exciting, and we worked hard to get the altar area ready and the temple area ready in the home. Michael just scrubbed and vacuumed and dusted and everything. He did such a good job. So anyway, we had a wonderful, wonderful anniversary, 27 years. I know we were talking about it so much, but it just seemed like it was such an incredibly long time, and we were really excited about it.
Well, I'm excited for you. That is a very long time, and you're
uh-huh.
both still very happy and very
yeah.
dedicated. So that's always great to see.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. And here's Michael.
Okay, Hercules, so thank you again for this opportunity. And our show is called The Worldwide Religion of Love, and more specifically, Gabriel's Worldwide Religion of Love, with Gabriel, also known as Hephaestus in the Greek, son of Zeus and Hera, and Gabriel, son of local universe father and local universe mother in the Urantia book, together with his divine consort, Aphrodite, in the Greek. She is sharing with the world more divine love and divine beauty, spreading that throughout the world at this time of the worldwide religion of love. Gabriel is infusing our minds with more divine truth to find out what's really going on in the universe and how his father and mother, the local universe father and mother, are the ones who are kind of in charge of our local universe of 10 million inhabitable planets. The worldwide religion of love is also being cared for and nurtured by divine love, Eros. And he is here tonight with us, and we are ready to have a wonderful radio program, and of course, Zeus is here with us today. We have a great show planned, Hercules. Once again, thank you. We've got myself. Yes, yes, please. Mm-hmm. We have myself, Michael Duncan, and we have my wonderful wife, Diane Duncan. We're going to be hosting our program tonight called The Worldwide Religion of Love. And one of our focuses is going to be about a lifestyle called the Light and Life Lifestyle, how to become a Christ in the 21st century. We'll be talking to our wonderful friend, Nick Curto, about God-centered spiritual lifestyles, and then we'll have our son Alexander is going to be talking to Hercules about H.P. Lovecraft.
Wow!
And then we'll also have our wonderful friend Gerald T. Farley, who's going to share thoughts and messages from the Arcturian Council. So we've got a wonderful show lined up here today. And Nick, are you there?
I believe Nick is here. Let me. I'll try talking to him offline. So you
sure,
you can
sure.
let me, I can
no
get
problem.
Him.
All right, I've got an introduction here that I'll share. So the words light and life, when we talk about a light and life lifestyle, the words light and life are a featured concept in the Urantia book. And Diane and I are past president and past board member of the Urantia Book Los Angeles Society, and that's the main society in Los Angeles for the Urantia Book. The Urantia Book being published in 1955 in Chicago by the Urantia Brotherhood. So the concept of light and life in the Urantia Book is when mortals on a planet have evolved to a particular stage of evolution where the individuals individually are plugged in to the main circuits of the cosmic scheme, doing the will of God. Planets then are part of a local system. The local system will eventually attain light and life, and so on and so forth through the local universe, super universe, all the way to paradise. So what we're focusing on as an aspect of the worldwide religion of love is the light and life lifestyle. It's a part of this new pathway that the local universe father and mother are giving to the world through Gabriel and Aphrodite. And since we're waiting for Nick to come on to tell us about his light and life, or his God-centered lifestyle, just want to give a little bit of background of what the light and life lifestyle is. And I think I can best sum it up in a song, because Diane and I are both singers, and we have 5 Urantia Book-inspired albums, and this particular song is on one of our albums. It's called Live a Pure Life and Talk to God. That's what it's all about. So I'm going to sing the song, and in it you can just, in a very, basic way, this is the basis for the light and life lifestyle. Live a pure life and talk to God. Here it goes. Live a pure life and talk to God. That's what it's all about. Walk in the ways of holiness. Raise the victory shout. Freedom, freedom. Freedom from a life in chains. All the world's darkness can leave you lame. Stand up. Rise up, live in the light of God. Live a pure life and talk to God. That's what it's all about. Push away the fear and doubt from too many thrills, keeping you still, spilling your life away. Make it today, let me hear you say, no more illusions. No more confusion. Here's the great solution. Live a pure life and talk to God. That's what it's all about. Walk in the ways of holiness. Raise the victory shout. Freedom. Freedom to explore the truth. Brothers and sisters, it's up to you. Hear God say, this is the way to everlasting life. Live a pure life and talk to God. That's what it's all about. Walk in the ways of holiness. Raise the victory shout. Freedom, freedom, freedom.
Wow.
Okay.
Awesome.
So, there it guys. So live a pure life. You're welcome. Live a pure life. Try to keep, you know, because one of our wonderful influences is John Harvey Kellogg, inventor, one of the inventors of Kellogg's Corn Flakes, Seventh-day Adventist minister. He wrote a book called The Living Temple, saying that our bodies are the temple of the living God, the living personal God. So, and of course, he was a doctor. So we talk about keeping the poisons away, and he also mentions this, keeping the poisons away from our bodies. And we also talk about trying to keep the poisons out of the mind so that our bodies can be a pure temple for God, expressing God's love and light. And then on the other side of live a pure life is the talk to God aspect, developing a closer, deeper relationship with God the Father and God the Mother, and that being done through, talking to God on a regular basis, having an inner life, inner communication with the Father and the Mother. And, of course, Gabriel and Aphrodite are involved in that also. And they would like everyone, eventually, to set up a temple or some space in their homes where the local universe Father and Mother and Gabriel and Aphrodite are featured so that a communication and a relationship can be developed. So basic light and life lifestyle. How to become a Christ in the 21st century is live a pure life and talk to God. That's what it's all about. So there you go. All right. Well, Hercules, you're here and ready. I have Alex here, and Alex is poised to talk about his interest in H.P. Lovecraft. Are you familiar with the writings of H.P. Lovecraft, Hercules?
Oh, of course. I love Lovecraft's dream cycle, and I have all of the stories in that, and I have quite a few of his Cthulhu stories as well.
Uh-huh. And yeah, I think Alex has... Yeah, go ahead.
And I think I first discovered them when I was around Alex's age also.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, Alex is 16, and he's got the complete fiction. He's got a nice compilation book called The Complete Fiction of H.P. Lovecraft. So, Hercules, are you ready to talk to Alex about H.P. Lovecraft?
I am ready to talk to Alex.
Okay. All right, here's Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine.
I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad that you discovered H.P. Lovecraft. How did you discover H.P. Lovecraft?
Mainly through my older brother.
Okay.
Who had a vague interest in him, and then I caught on to that interest and became interested myself. But it's not really a vague interest.
Oh, it's not vague anymore? Now it's a strong interest?
Yeah.
So which stories do you like of Lovecraft?
You ever heard of this? My favorite is The Thing on the Doorstep.
Okay. I don't remember them. It's been a while since I've read them, so I don't remember specific stories. So can you tell me a little bit about that story?
The Thing on the Doorstep is one of the ones that, honestly, the hook is perfect. Like, how to get the reader's attention is just perfect. But it's a little, it's so shocking that it actually makes you want to read more. But I think it's too shocking.
Yeah, Lovecraft likes to shock the people, and he developed a very elaborate mythology, and then other writers started writing in the Lovecraft, the Cthulhu mythos. And
yeah,
so it became a phenomenon.
Shouldn't you call it the Cthulhos? Cthulhos? That sounded better in my head.
Okay. People usually pronounce it Cthulhu.
Yeah. You know, believe it or not, I think there is a bit of a disparity with the Cthulhu mythos and the rest of the books.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are actually ones that are exempt from the Cthulhu mythos. Others are not. But there are a great amount of them that amount to what I call the Necronomicon mythos, which involves the Necronomicon and its existence. But what I think is the most important of all of Lovecraft's books, all of them, is The Dream Quest of the Unknown Kadoth.
That's one of my favorites, too.
Yeah. It's the most important because, for God's sake, it literally spells out the entire mythos and introduces a literal epic of Greek proportions.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, and what's so weird about it is that it introduces the fact that there is somebody out there who can brave the elder gods and retain their sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that should, the Dream Quest of the Unknown Kadoth should probably be the main one of the, all of the mythoses, because it's the one that basically connects them all.
I like the dream cycle. All the stories of Lovecraft that take place in the land of dream, and then other people like August Derleth and I'm drawing a blank on the names right now, but a lot of writers have also written in the dreamlands.
Believe it or not, this dreamland is one of the most important parts because it's one of the only ways humans can comprehend the elder gods without going insane.
Mm-hmm.
And the other books, such as Through the Gates of the Silver Key or The Silver Key, The Statement of Randolph Carter, are all connected to the Dream Quest of the Unknown Kadoth. But there are ones in this book that actually do not fit into any sort of place. They're kind of a kind of like side novels, if anything, such as The Outsider, Herbert West Reanimator.
Yes.
And amazingly, one of the strangest novels I think he's ever written, Sweet Emringard.
I don't remember that one. Can you give a synopsis?
This will sound amazing to you, but Sweet Emringard is about a girl named Emringard who attempts to get out of the dastardly clutches of a very stereotypical villain. You know, like the mustache twirling type guy.
Uh huh.
Yeah, it's like that. And I just think to myself, did he really write this? Because I just like to think that his wife just said, can you write something happy for once? And he just turns around and says, challenge accepted. Still, it's literally one of the only happy stories in this entire book. In fact, it is the only one.
Yeah, Lovecraft wasn't known for writing happy stories.
He was not into it, but he did a good job with Sweet Emringard, since it was put in like a play and all that. Really nice, actually.
I liked more when I was younger, but I still enjoy watching them. There's a genre called sword and sorcery, and person who started that genre is called Robert E. Howard, and he invented the character of Conan the Barbarian. And he and Lovecraft were pen pals. And Lovecraft also got published in Weird Tales, which was a pulp magazine at the time. So Howard used to write in the Cthulhu mythos with some of his stories. He placed Lovecraftian elements in his stories, and then vice versa. Lovecraft occasionally put Robert E. Howard type of stuff in his stories. So back then the authors had a lot of fun with it, and they would borrow each other's material and make something synergistically bigger than their individual works.
Here's a weird fun fact that you probably didn't know. Lovecraft knew Houdini. They were actually really? Very good friends.
That's great.
Because, fun fact, Lovecraft actually wrote a book with Houdini called Under the Pyramids.
What was that
and
about?
And it's obvious the narrator of it is Houdini.
And was that a horror story or a mysterious
it
story?
It was, yeah. Yes, it was.
Are you into role-playing games, tabletop role-playing games?
No. I used to be, but it was a very short interest that has dwindled to almost nothing.
There is a Call of Cthulhu RPG, and there have been a Call of Cthulhu video games and computer games as well.
Yes. There's one particular one that I think solidifies the aesthetic really well called The Sinking City.
Okay.
And honestly, I don't think they really got the story right or anything else, but they got the aesthetic right. Because basically it's about a guy named Charles Reed who had served in the First World War, and he's summoned to a small town that has suffered many floods called Oakmont. And he tries to unravel the reason everything that has happened to that town.
Mm-hmm.
It really solidifies the aesthetic.
And you mentioned Herbert West, The Reanimator. Are you into any of the other Lovecraft-inspired films as well?
No, not really, because they don't really get his aesthetic right. Because there's a really weird misconception that a lot of Lovecraft's creatures and characters are aquatic-based. But most of them actually aren't. In fact, a recent adaptation of The Color Out of Space, starring Nicolas Cage, of course, didn't really hit right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is that what Lovecraft originally intended is for everyone to die in it, not to become mindless zombies and start hunting people down. That's kind of ridiculous. With Herbert West Reanimator, what they were doing with that is that they just made it too horrific, because there's an overall comedic tone to Herbert West Reanimator, I find.
There was a good Lovecraft adaptation called Dagon.
Yeah.
That I saw years ago, and that seems to be pretty faithful in spirit to the material.
Funny fact about Dagon and the Call of Cthulhu is that there are Dr. Seuss versions, if you want to look those up.
Really?
Yeah. But Dr. Seuss didn't, collaborate with Lovecraft or anything. It's done by a guy who loves both Dr. Seuss and Lovecraft. And I think to myself, well, I have both the books physically, so that should be great.
So there you go. There have been Lovecraft toys also, Funko Pops and action figure type toys that are very Lovecraftian. And even there's a stuffed Lovecraft, a Cthulhu.
Yeah, speaking of that, I'm actually holding a Lovecraft statue that was actually sculpted with the interpretation of Lovecraft intended Cthulhu to look like. In fact, there's actually a drawing of his that illustrates it, believe it or not. And Cthulhu apparently has multiple eyes, not just two eyes.
Right. Cthulhu has many eyes. And there was also a television series, I believe, animated with Lovecraft. I haven't seen it, but I saw pictures of the the promo page or the cover of the DVD set.
Yeah, I actually intended to make a Lovecraftian series, but I'm going to have to do it after I do everything else. I'll call it Eldritch Things.
Oh, you have to show it off when you do it.
Yeah.
We'll definitely help spread the word here.
Yeah, there's still, though, you actually read Herbert West Reanimator, right?
I saw that in the sequel, too. There was a sequel, I believe.
There's actually something extremely comedic about how everything is described.
Yes.
Like, for example, it says here, I lay still and somewhat dazed, but before long heard a West's rap on my door. He was clad in dressing gown and slippers, and he had in his hands a revolver and an electric flashlight. From the revolver, I knew he was thinking more of Crazed Italian than of the police. "He'd better both go," he whispered. "No one need not answer to any. Maybe patience, maybe like one of those fools to try the back door." So we went down the stairs on tiptoe. Do you just imagine them, like, sneaking that really, like, cartoonish way, like on their tiptoes?
Yes. Lovecraft wrote in a very distinct way that's very easily parodied.
Yeah, because the thing is that other times I can see that he's onto something, and other times I'm just awestruck by the way he does these things, like what I just I'm gonna read here.
Okay.
Says here, "For the scrims of the frightened gods have turned to laughter, and the slopes of ice shoot up endlessly into the black heavens, whither I am plunging. Hey, hey, last! In the dim light I behold the gods of the earth." I imagine that there's some guy in a robe standing up on a flat mountain with a very stormy-looking weather, and he holds his arms out, and you see vague shapes, like, beyond, but not much else. As he just says, "In the dim light I behold the gods of the earth." Pretty good.
Yeah, very good. I remember he wrote The Doom That Came to Sarnath, and he wrote about some starfish-shaped beings from outer space. I don't remember what they were called or what the story was called.
At the Mountains of Madness.
Yes, at the Mountains of Madness, yes. But very memorable stories, very well written, and so creative that they spawned a genre of stories. And people imitated them widely, and still today, many years after H.P. Lovecraft has passed, people are still reading his stories, writing stories that in the universe he created, and creating things like DVDs and video games that weren't even realities during the time he lived.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think we've come to our end, the end of our time.
Well, I enjoyed speaking with you, as always, and I enjoyed learning new things from you, and also revisiting things that I had forgotten but greatly enjoyed. So thank you so very much, Alex.
Pleasure was all
mine. Thanks,
Alex.
Be well, and I hand the show back to Michael.
All right, fantastic. Thank you very much, Hercules. All right, so we've got our lifestyle, our light and life lifestyle, and God-centered lifestyle, spiritual lifestyle. We're focusing on a little bit in this program, and Hercules and Gerald, as you know, we've belonged to and studied from a lot of different spiritual traditions throughout our lives, and especially since Diane and I came together, and a lot of those, a lot of those spiritual traditions and religions, they talk about a lifestyle, a spiritual lifestyle.
If I may interrupt for 1 second, please, Michael, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Nick has joined us, so I just wanted to let you know he's here.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, hi, Nick, are you there?
Yes, I am. Apologies for being so tardy. I was writing a major project, and time just whizzed by. So apologies for being so late.
Well, don't you worry about it. Glad to have you, Nick. We're talking about the spiritual lifestyle, and that Diane and I have been associated with many lifestyles through our membership and study of spiritual traditions and religions. And, hey, tell us what you've learned.
Oh, boy, what haven't I heard is really the question. I was brought up Roman Catholic. My Irish mother and my Italian father were both Roman Catholic, and my aunt was a nun in the Catholic Church, a Sister Superior, and so I've been very much involved. At one point, I was thinking of being a priest when I was in my late teens. I really thought about that, but I decided, no, I needed to see the world. I wanted to expose myself to more spiritual and religious practices. And when I came to New York from New England, that's exactly what I did. And boy, did I hit it right, because as you know, Michael, there's so many different spiritual and religious groups in New York City.
Yeah.
So right. It was quite an amazing experience. And long story short, I ended up in the Unitarian Church near where I live in the Upper East Side, and they read something after 2 years of going there called the Urantia Book, and I was totally enthralled in what I heard, and I traced it down to a study group, and here I am now. I just got a grant to do a $2,700 grant to do advertising for the Urantia Book on network radio.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
I'm very involved, very involved.
Congratulations, Nick.
Thank you, thank you. I'm really excited about that, too, and we're working on the radio 30-second and 60-second versions of that. So it's quite an adventure.
Well, keep us updated, huh?
I will. In fact, at one point, I'll play you, if you'd like, the 30- and the 60-second versions of the radio ads.
Sure, absolutely.
So what else, Michael, can I tell you? Is there something particular area?
So we'll be listening to those later. Okay, so, just wanted to see specifically if you had gleaned anything from your studies of the Urantia Book, your involvement with the Urantia Book community, regarding a God-centered spiritual lifestyle that maybe everyone else could do, you know, practice.
Well, you know, it has been quite an amazing journey. And when I found the Urantia Book, I really felt deeply that I had found the teaching that I hoped in my life I would find, but I didn't know if I would ever find it. And when I did find it, it was just absolutely the most amazing experience to read the book. And I was in a study group for many years, Robin and Helene Jorgensen's group in Soho of New York City. And all of those people were questioning everything you can imagine, how we live our lives, what we should do, what we should avoid. Is there life after death? What would it be like to see an angel? Are there angels? What if there are? What are the denominations of angels? What other beings would be involved in our universe and other universes? And what would they be like? And the Urantia Book actually not only takes those questions to task, but goes into deep detail. And I was absolutely glued, because this is like the book that of everything. It's all the questions you ever wanted to ask, and there they are, one after the another. And it's a very large book, as you know. It's almost 2,000 pages big. And but don't let that deter you from opening up a chapter that looks interesting to you and just read it. And that's what I did. And as I read the chapters, I especially wanted to find out what their take was on a particular subject. It was all deepening. Every single one of them just deepened me more into my belief, a strong belief, that I found the book that in my life I always wanted to find, and I did. And I recommend that to everyone. It's got something for everyone in the book. As you know, it is the most brilliantly written book I've ever come across. It is It really is, I think, the most important book you could possibly have in your library.
Yeah. All right. Well, there he is, a champion for the Urantia book and the Urantia book lifestyle. Thank you so much, Nick, for coming on. I appreciate it. We're looking forward to listening to those spots for the advertisements for the Urantia book. And hey, thanks for coming on. And Nick, many blessings to you.
Always my honor to be on the show with you and your beautiful wife, Diane.
All right, Nick. Thank you so much.
Right.
All right.
Take
care. Gerald. Hey, Gerald. Are you there? Gerald T. Farley.
Yes.
Well, hello, Gerald. It's nice to talk to you again. We've got a program here tonight where we're talking about, the Urantia book, and we're talking about other spiritual traditions, but especially a God-centered, spiritually-centered life and lifestyle. And in my song, Gerald, was Live a Pure Life and Talk to God. And I guess we could even expand that to listen to the messages that God, the gods, what have you, are saying. So you are going to be offering us some messages from the Arcturian Council, but first Diane wants to say something.
Okay. Hi there, everybody. Hercules.
Hello.
And Nick, Gerald, hello. I just wanted to make kind of an announcement because we just recently had the Tao come out to our home. And this woman that came with our dear friend is, again, the master of the largest temple in the Western Hemisphere. But what she was really interested in our home, and while we were enjoying the beautiful fruits of the dinner that they brought, was that she wanted to know how we had raised all our children, if we had raised them with the life-giving foods of the fruits and the vegetables. And I just wanted to insert this before we get on to Gerald tonight, because this lifestyle, the new lifestyle in the new life that we will have, is very important. And we told her that each child that has been raised in our home, and we've had these children, three children that we've raised, the last 16 years, three of them, two boys and a girl, we are raising them completely vegetarian. That as long as they've been here in this 16 years, they've only had the fruits of the trees and the vegetables. But my inclusion here that I wanted to mention before we go on is that the gods are encouraging me to become more of a frugivore. Now, I don't know if a lot of people have heard about that, but a frugivore eats almost all the fruits rather than even the vegetables with them. So I'm trying to go in that direction, and I just wanted to insert that. And, Gerald, what we want to hear all about everything you have to say, and here is Michael.
All right, Gerald, please bless us with words from the gods.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Diane, and thank you, Nick, and so glad to be here, Hercules. Thank you. And I appreciate everything that Alex and you talked about, especially the part about Harry Houdini, and who was definitely involved with one of the mainstays of the Urantia Revelation. They were both looking for how to deal with spiritualism and expose it in the early 1900s. They worked together, Houdini and the doctor. So anyhow, this is a message. Thank you all from the Arcturian group. And it's titled Experiencing Separation. Dear students of truth, welcome to our message. Never doubt that both personally and globally, a divine plan is unfolding. it was never meant that Earth remain forever a planet of three-dimensional energy governed illusory beliefs of duality, separation, and two powers. Eons ago, souls still in spirit form chose to experience what it would be like to feel separate from Creator Source. However, over time, they began to forget that their experiences were not real. Some became lost and trapped in illusions of separation that they themselves had chosen, and separation became their state of consciousness, which allowed manifestations of density to begin. Some remembered who they were and wisely chose to no longer play the game, but many remained in human ego and did not. This correlates with the story of the fallen angels. Earth is now ready to evolve beyond the ancient energies of separation that have ruled for so long, because separation never has been a reality. Humans were not meant to live in fear, vulnerable to all the human egoic mind-formed creations of material sense and separation. We are divine beings, always have been, always will be. But the belief of separation has become so deeply ingrained in Earth's collective consciousness that evolving beyond it has, of its very nature, become quite a process. Everyone can choose to clear old but still active energy accumulated over having lived hundreds of lifetimes in duality and separation before we can fully align with the higher frequencies. At this point, as increasingly more spiritual light energy pours to Earth as part of our soul ascension process, ancient, dense energies that have long lain dormant in Earth herself are now surfacing. The same thing is occurring on an individual level. Old energies that have been stored and carried in cellular memory from actual lifetime to lifetime are also surfacing in order to be cleared and acknowledged. Large clearings, as those in which certain beliefs were active in more than one lifetime, usually take place in increments that often begin with some physical, emotional, mental, and or spiritual type of experience that causes us to believe we have somehow failed. Clearing of these very experiences can range from the devastating collapse of our entire belief system to a very simple realization of some belief that needs deeper examination. Most of us humans are unaware of energy needing to be cleared because it was accumulated and stored in other lifetimes, which is why clearing experiences often seem to come out of the blue. A great many clearings take place in the dream state while we sleep. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
People, places, and situations remembered or people known in this very lifetime playing different roles often occur. Clearings usually take place in increments when more than one past life was involved in the same way, an ancient religious group or cult, religious orders, or a school of thought that demanded vows and oaths. We can choose to look on our clearing experiences as graduations rather than something to dread, in the sure knowledge that the dissolving of old energy will leave us on a higher energetic level than when we were carrying it in our energy field. Some of us believing that we can actually go backward in our evolutionary process live each day continually alert to every bad or negative thought that may come floating through our human egoic sensory linear mind in fear of spiritually failing or regressing. They want us to know it is impossible to revert to a previous state of human consciousness once we have evolved beyond it. Yes, old and familiar thoughts will continue to come and go for a while, but human thinking and heart-mind consciousness are not the same thing at a spiritual level. Many have tried to go back to an easier, earlier time, but the spiritual evolutionary process does not allow a person to go back asleep once they have awakened to some aspect of truth. Spiritual realization can be very inconvenient. A person has gotten used to a familiar, comfortable lifestyle. A truth realized can be ignored, and often is, but the nagging influence of the realization always remains, popping up when least desired to spoil the fun. Whoops. Every person at some point will awaken to their Christ self, which is known by many names, and whichever is appealing to each individual, it works. There were many Christs, and this one that I speak of refers to Jesus the Christ. It cannot be avoided because it is reality. In spite of appearances to the contrary, every individual, sick or well, good or bad, rich or poor, curious or ignorant, is a manifestation of Creator's divine consciousness simply because nothing else exists. Either there is an omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent divine consciousness called Creator Source, or there is not. And free will allows every person to accept or deny this. But the choice they make cannot ever change or affect Creator Source, universal reality. In other words, Creator's will and truth. We can choose to realize that an infinite Creator Source cannot be understood with the finite human mind. Many have tried, and many falsely believe that they have done it, but the human mind is limited by three-dimensional concepts and beliefs that can never truly comprehend the vast realities of divine consciousness. However, Creator Source can and does reveal itself to those prepared and receptive, which is why meditation plays an important part in the spiritual journey. The real purpose of true meditation is spiritual alignment with Source, and not necessarily for attracting something desired, although that can happen, or just to relax, having experiences, seeing colors and visions, or hearing voices. All of that is valid. We can choose to have no desires when we meditate other than to align with and rest in oneness with the divine essence of our own being. This contact may or may not manifest then or later as more light, more awareness, self-healing, or answers needed. We may experience something during meditation and we may not, but this does not ever invalidate the meditation. With all things, our attention is important. And with every meditation should simply be alignment with Source within. The Christ Self is that facet of us that has never left conscious oneness with Source and is continually guiding our spiritual journey, because it is actually us. Our Christ Self draws to us the experiences we are spiritually prepared for and that are necessary for attaining a higher state of our heart-mind consciousness. We will never get experiences beyond our ability to learn and grow from, although it may not seem that way when we are feeling overwhelmed in the midst of some intense third-dimensional difficulty. Our Arcturian brothers and sisters wish to speak once again about love and remind us that love is all that exists, because it is the energetic connection flowing in, through, around, and between the infinite expressions of one divine consciousness. Love affects, is a part of, and influences everything. Love is the omnipresent harmony of one, but on earth is all too often interpreted through windows of duality, separation, and two powers, positive and negative, light and dark, forming love's many egoic-based false creations or miscreations. That is, the human egoic aspect of love is often used physically, mentally, and emotionally, control or abuse another, and is frequently an excuse to fulfill ego desire through activities involving guilt, dishonesty, or predatory force, or false victimhood, as well as hundreds of other self-serving actions. And this is all coming to the surface right now as yeah. we're speaking.
Yeah, it is.
More often. Yeah.
And love is the watchword of our program and the celestial program that we're talking about at this time, Gerald, the worldwide religion of love, under the guidance, of course, and direction of our local universe Father and Mother, and brought to us by Gabriel and Aphrodite, and of course the Arcturian Council and all of the beings and celestial friends and administrators, upholders, creators that are now at this time, like you say, Gerald, are aligning us more and more with the higher frequencies and awakening us to our Christ selves. Hey, Gerald, how can people get a hold of you if they'd like to talk to you and learn more about what you're doing?
It's area code 503-385-8480 or GeraldTFarley@hotmail.com.
Well, thank you so much, Gerald, for that offering. And I the meditation is one of the aspects of the light and life lifestyle that we were talking about earlier too, and we really find it beneficial to everyone. Also, and hey, Gerald, I wanted to just give us a couple minutes here. I wanted to hear Nick's contact information and how we can get a hold of Hercules and his work. But just wanted to say, give a shout out to Nick Curto, because on July 26th, Nick Curto is having a birthday.
Whoa,
you there,
thank
Nick?
You for that. Thank you.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, wow.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Nick.
Well, you know, it's a happy birthday because of all of you. That is really true.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Nick.
Thank you, Diane. Right? Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Gerald.
You're welcome.
All right, and Hercules, or Nick, how can people get a hold of you, Nick, and learn about your work?
Okay, my email is nicknyny1, and that's the numeral 1, not O-N-E, @gmail.com. So again, nicknyny1 @gmail.com. And I want to give the website for the Urantia book, because it's such a beautifully done website with so much information in it, and that is urantiabook.org.
Fantastic. All right. And the way you can get a hold of Diane and myself, it's Michael Duncan, DUNKIN1, @hotmail.com. If you'd like to see some of the things we're doing, you can check out our YouTube channel. It's Michael and Diane with two N's, Duncan, DUNKIN. Michael and Diane Duncan. We have over 114 videos of our celestial team meetings, our songs, and our artwork. And if you want to listen to our albums, download or streaming, it's you can just search Reverend Michael Duncan, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music. And Hercules, how can people get a hold of you and learn about the wonderful, wonderful work that you do?
Thank you, Michael. People can find me on Facebook as Hercules Invictus. I have a Hercules Invictus station on Blog Talk Radio. And I also have a YouTube channel, also Hercules Invictus. So I'm pretty easy to find. They can Google me and find it through that as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much, guys. And hey, I just wanted to say thank you, Hercules, our producer here, and the generous gift that you've given us of having an opportunity to speak and to express everything that we believe that our celestial friends want us to share with the world regarding the worldwide religion of love under Gabriel and Aphrodite. And the message from Diane is more fresh fruits and vegetables on your table. All right, guys. God bless you all. Gerald, thank you. Nick, thank you. Hercules, thank you. And I know Alex thanks you all for being so kind to him and generous with your time. Thanks.
Much love to you all everywhere.
Love you all.
And
all right.
Very soon I'll be sending each of you an email. I'm restructuring things a little bit, but it will be to focus on the Worldwide Religion of Love, which is our first joint project. So we're going to be dealing with its growth and understanding it in a much more structured and scheduled way.
Well, fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, and thanks to everybody who joined us. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we will close the show with Michael's God Bless the World.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
God bless the world. God bless the world. God bless the world. God bless the world. God bless the world.